Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. This is a great joy for us to have Swami Nirakaranandaji from the St. Louis Center. Swami Nirakaranandaji is an assistant minister to Swami Chittananda there and in charge of many things, including their bookstore. Swami Nirakaranandaji joined the order in 1993 in Bourne End, England. He then went to India and spent 5 years there, first at the training center and then at Mysore. He took his sannyas vows in 2006 and then in 2007 was assigned to St. Louis, where he has been for the last 12 years. Swami Nirakaranandaji is accomplished in many things, including speaking, but if you come this weekend, he will be with us tomorrow and Sunday morning. Tomorrow especially, if you enjoy learning through music, the Swami is a wonderful singer and musician, and will sing for us and tell us about the meaning of the songs in the context of Raja Yoga. Tonight he will speak to us on the spiritual journey. Swami, we're so delighted to have you with us.
Thank you.
For those of you who aren't already aware, there's a potluck, a supper after the talk, and so please join us if you can. The Swami will then meet with the devotees after the supper in the library for a time. Sorry for the false start, Swami.
No, that's very good. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavit Vishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. May Brahman protect us. May Brahman guide us. May Brahman give us strength and right understanding. May love and harmony be with us all. Peace, peace, peace. And I'm very happy to be here today. And I'm thankful to Brother Shankara for inviting me. I met him a few years ago in St. Louis, may have been, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I lose track of time. But he spent a couple of days. At that time, I met him for the first time. And then he kindly invited me to come and visit you. So the subject that we can discuss today is the spiritual journey. I was thinking about it when Brother Shankara was introducing me. He said that I joined in 1993 and spent some years in England, then I spent some years in India. And when you listen to it, it's just a few sentences. Okay, he was there. But the person who lives it, it is their journey. In those few sentences, how many things I went through. Only I know. It means a lot to the person who is the traveler. For the others, it's just a few sentences. Oh, he was there, he did this, he was there, he did that. So each one of us have our own journey. Vedanta tells us that we are spirit. We are free. There's nowhere to go. So why speak of a journey? If we believe the teachings of Vedanta in the ultimate And others says, we are free already. We are pure spirit. But somehow is an important word. Somehow we find ourselves caught up in the warp of time and space. And we believe intellectually that we are spirit. But the empirical reality points in a different direction. So we feel we are spirit. At the same time, we find ourselves anchored to a body. We find ourselves caught in our own thinking, in our own minds. And it's really difficult to change that mind. So if you ask a Vedantin, why did this happen? How come you're pure spirit and then you think you're a body and a mind? Some of you can understand it is Maya. And he also said, Maya is just a word. We are not helping much by saying it's Maya. Maya is a statement of fact, is life as we have it, is this gray area that we feel we are spirit, and at the same time we have a physical and a mental dimension. This state of affairs, Swami Vivekananda calls it Maya. Hinduism calls it Maya. So, okay, we believe we are spirit, we believe we are free, and we find ourselves in this predicament that we are not free, and we have a material and a mental dimension. So the spiritual journey is going back to that state. And it's a long and difficult, arduous task to go back to where, to our original state. Somebody said that life are the adventures of the spirit in the realm of matter. So we are having our adventures. We are spirit, but we find ourselves in the realm of matter. Sometimes misadventures. So, Vedanta says that we come to this world again and again and go through innumerable experiences. And at some point we get tired of it. At some point we have enough of it. And we want to stop this coming and going, being born and dying again and again. Through experience, we come to a point where we feel, I had enough of this. Then our spiritual journey begins. Now, they say life is a journey. And it's true. We go through different stages. We learn along the way. Sometimes, with the passing of time, life gets better. We get wiser. And sometimes the opposite happens. And life gets tougher. So life is a journey. Yes, it is true. But not necessarily a spiritual journey. Life is a journey for everybody, but not necessarily a spiritual journey. So when does the spiritual journey begin? Well, it's different for different people. There's a difference between a traditional religious upbringing and the spiritual quest. It's a big difference. We can be born and brought up in a traditional religious environment, and we will never really embark in the spiritual journey. A traditional religious environment can be dogmatic, can be superficial. So from that point of view, it can be counterproductive. So it's not religion as we know it, as a tradition. It's more than that. So this spiritual journey can start at any time. I read recently a story about Swami Vijñanananda was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, and he was a very eccentric and very big man. So people used to be intimidated by his presence. He became the president of the Ramakrishna order. So I thought this story was interesting, that a group of students were being taken to him for spiritual initiation. He would give them a mantra. Young girls, maybe 14, 15. So there was a small girl, 9 years old, and when she heard that the older girls were going, she wanted to go too. And they said, no, no, you cannot go. You're too small. You will not understand anything. But she wouldn't give up, and she forced them to take her to the Swami. And there was this big Swami. He hardly speaks. He speaks very, very little. And there's an aura. There's a kind of a seriousness about him. He's like a rishi of the old days. And this 9-year-old girl, everybody comes into the room, and she stands in the doorway. And the Swami says, what do you want? He spotted her from a distance. She says, I also want the mantra. And he says, you're too small, you will forget. No, I won't forget. I remember my lessons at school. Why will I forget? And so I say, okay, I'll initiate you. And I thought, she's starting her spiritual journey, age 9. One thing is that the teacher is taking the older girls. Of course, they must have wanted it. But this girl on her own is fighting for it. 9 years old. And then the story doesn't end there. She forgets the mantra when she goes home. And so then she talks with the father. And the father says, look, I cannot go and speak on your behalf. You wanted your mantra. You have to go and speak with your guru yourself. So she says, fine, you take me there to Belur Math and I'll speak with him. So she goes and says, weeping, I forgot the mantra. And he says, didn't you say that you will not forget? You remember all your lessons? Then he says, you see, we should not assert ourselves that way. We should not be egotistic. He's telling a 9-year-old girl. And he writes down the mantra and gives it to her to keep safely. But what I thought was interesting was how some people come with certain tendencies to this world that at 9 years old, they know what they want and they fight for it. So there is another story that I think Swami Ranganathananda told us, that in France he encountered a devotee, and she came to Vedanta when she was 70 or in her 70s, and she changed her life completely. She became a staunch Vedantin, and she never for a moment said, oh, I wish I had come earlier. She was perfectly happy to start her journey at 70. So what I mean to say by this is the journey starts at any time. One thing is the journey of our lives. And the other thing is that we make spiritual life one of our goals, or the main goal in our lives. So many things are going on, but also the spiritual life becomes important to us. Many people, I don't want to say the majority, but many people, they never feel the need of a spiritual life or a spiritual quest. It's something that is, they miss out completely. So, the spiritual journey starts at any time. Now, if we are going to compare the spiritual life to a journey, we can distinguish 4 stages in our journey. The first one is the departure. The second one is finding our way. The third one is proceeding along the way. And finally, we reach our destination. So we can see these stages one by one. What is the departure? For many of us, the departure is the awareness that we are not happy with our present location. That much we know. We don't know what we want. Somebody said, I don't know what I want, but I want it now. So, we may not know what we want exactly, but we are not happy with the present state of affairs. Our life is not right. We want some. We need a change. We feel the need to change. So we come out. That is the departure. Not knowing where we go. I remember when I was, in my early days, I was searching for something, but I never thought I would become a Vedantin or be drawn to Hinduism. There was nothing in my background that suggested that or encouraged that. Absolutely nothing. So you never know. You start with, yogasanas, and one thing leads to another, and there you are. You find yourself a swami. It's interesting how it happens. But I knew one thing, that, for each person is different. I thought life is too short and too impermanent. That was the main thing for me. How can I be satisfied with this life alone, knowing that we'll come to an end? That was the main thing for me. So I didn't know anything about Hinduism or anything such thing. And I didn't have much faith in traditional religion, probably because what I received from it was very negative. So the departure is that we want to go somewhere, but we don't know where. Often what happens is there is some crisis, and that wakes us up. I may lose something or someone, or there is a change in my life. There's usually a trigger that I need to, look for something else, something deeper. Say, if my identity is that what I have is who I am, whether it is relationships or possessions, what I have is who I am. When I don't have it anymore, who am I? It's a crisis. I identified myself with certain people or certain things. Those things are gone. What's left? So it can be a very serious crisis. And this can be a starting point for a serious search. That I was counting on this. I was counting on this person. I was counting on this, whatever I had. And now is there no more? Then that was not reliable. Is there anything that can sustain me, can support me? So it is not unusual that our spiritual life, our spiritual journey begins with some sort of crisis. Then we want to find out who we are, who's left after we lose whatever we lose. Who is the real person? Who is the real me? In the old days, in the theater, they used to wear masks for the characters. And the name of the mask was persona. So we are wearing so many masks. One mask says, I'm learned, I'm wealthy, I am this, I'm that. Who is behind the mask? So we want to discover the real person behind the masks. So what do we do? We go to teachers, we go to places, trying to find, if there is such a thing, spirituality. Sri Ramakrishna said that some people never get past this stage. It becomes like a spiritual curiosity to find different things. And we learn things, and there's nothing negative about it. It's just that we remain at that level, at the superficial level of intellectual curiosity. He said that a person wanted to dig a well to get water. So he started digging in one place, and there were some roots of a tree. So he said, oh, forget it. This is too hard. So he went somewhere else, started digging. After some time, he got sand. Oh no, this is too tough. Started digging somewhere else. Then he got some stones. Oh no, 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 let me go somewhere else. Sri Ramakrishna says, he never got water. If we believe by digging we'll get water, just stick to it, whatever place we have faith in. So that's the idea. We look for things, we go here and there, and at some point we find what suits it. Hopefully we find what is suitable to us. So then what happens? We are finding our road. We find the path for us. So this is the second stage. We left our comfort zone because we wanted something new. We searched for it, and then finally we found it. And this is very subjective. How and why some things appeal to us, even we don't know. It just happens. That the Christian can become a devotee of Krishna, or a Hindu can become a Christian, a devotee of Jesus. Probably previous lives, but really we don't know. The answer is we don't know. It's a rational explanation to say previous lives, but really speaking, we don't know. So then we become close to this new path. We start visiting whatever, you know, the church or whatever it is. We may get a teacher also. Then again, it's very interesting, the teacher-student relationship. When I first came to the monastery, there was a monk who was a man of very few words. And he was affectionate in a very subdued way, not very effusive. And so I was a young man, and I said, Swami, can I help? He used to do gardening. I said, Swami, can I help? He said, oh, no, no, thank you. So he's an old man, and I have to watch him working. He would not allow me. And after, so this went on for a couple of months. And then one day he said, take that and put it there. I was so happy. I couldn't believe it. If he had done it on day one, probably it wouldn't have meant much. But he made me feel that being involved in the work was a blessing, was a privilege. So we find a person, a teacher, or a place that attracts us, and we find our way. We start interacting. Or you could say we become devotees, or Vedantins, whatever you want to call it. So when this happens, we get three things that are very helpful in our spiritual journey. When we find our path, it's what the Buddhists call the three gems. They say, Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, Sangham Sharanam Gacchami. So I have come to the Buddha for refuge. I have come to the Dharma, to the righteous teaching, for refuge. I have come to the Sangha, to the holy congregation, for refuge. So this we get when we find the path. Who is Buddha? Buddha is a state. It can be Christ. It can be Ramakrishna. It can be any ideal. We get an ideal. In Sanskrit, it's called Ishta. So we get an ideal that is the object of our love, or whatever you want to call it. An ideal that we want to be like them, an ideal teacher. So it's very important. Now we have a goal. Then the Dharma is the teachings. So the Dharma will tell us, this is the way to go. And this is the way better to avoid. There's no punishment. But if we go this way, it will take much longer. And you'll spend more money and you will get tired. If you go this way, it'll be straight. So it makes sense to take the easy way. But there's no punishment or any such thing. And then the Sangha, holy company. That also is a big help. We get fellow travelers. We are not alone anymore. So we get the goal, we get the teachings to guide us, and we get the company of fellow travelers. Somebody said that each spiritual teacher is like a sun, and the followers are like planets orbiting around them. So there are so many suns in the galaxies, and there are so many planets. There's no need to have the exclusive right to shine. No sun has the exclusive right to shine. All the suns shine. And there are so many planets. So we find our orbit. Okay, this is my orbit and I know it. Okay, the suns are there. I can see them. They're as beautiful. But it's not my sun. I'm happy with my sun. And I'm going around my sun. Doesn't take the brilliance from the other suns. So we become devotees, so to say. But there, Sri Ramakrishna said there are many types of devotees. One devotee says, God is up there. Another type says, God is in my heart. Another type says, God is in everything. So you can see the evolution of a devotee. God is up there means, I am here, God is there. There's a big distance. God is in my heart. Okay, that's much closer. And God is everything. Then whatever I do, is God is involved. All my interactions are with God only. He also used to say that there are four types of devotees. The beginner, then the sadhaka, or the practitioner, the perfected, and the supremely perfect. The beginner has just come to the spiritual journey. They are very enthusiastic, but we pay a lot of attention to externals. We don't know much. We are learning. Then the practitioner, it's probably many of us, we have some interest in the spiritual disciplines that are taught. Listening to them is not enough. We want to practice them. We are making an effort. And that it's, there's great joy in just making an effort. There's great satisfaction in saying, I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to change. I may be far away from the goal, but the fact that I'm changing is very satisfying. I'm trying. Then the perfected devotee, they have had a glimpse of something that is not of this world. It may be a very passing glimpse, but once you see that, you see your angle changes, your perspective changes. You see the same world from a different perspective. So it has profound consequences, although it may be just one incident in our whole life. And then the supremely perfect is somebody who has fully realized God. Sri Ramakrishna said, some have heard about milk. They heard that milk exists. Some have seen milk. Oh yes, it's white, it's liquid. I can see that. And some have drunk milk. If you drink it, you get the full benefit. You become nourished by it. So the illumined person has drunk the milk. For us, we have heard about it. Some lucky one may have seen it. So this is the second stage when we find our way. But the third stage is the longest, the most challenging, traveling the way. Okay, I left my comfort zone and in search of something else. Then I found the path, and now the hard work begins. I have to walk that path, which I have chosen. Nobody has forced me. I have chosen to walk that path, and now I'm complaining. So what happens when we try to walk the path to practice spiritual disciplines? If we don't have any spiritual interest, our minds will work at a very superficial level. It is all matter. It is all about, even if I am very intellectual, still it's at the intellectual level. But when you take a serious interest in meditation, it's like a new world opens. We go deeper into our own minds to see what is there. We have no idea. When you see how many things are going on in ourselves which are not in our control. We are digesting the food. We are sleeping at night. All this is done by the mind. It's as if we have no say in the matter. Say I slept at night and I woke up with a stiff neck and it's really hurting. What happened? I was sleeping in the wrong position. And I may be very smart. I may be, you know, a super nuclear scientist. And still I couldn't turn myself to avoid sleeping in a bad position. So this is our condition. There are so many things that the mind is doing for us. And we have no control. When we attempt to meditate, we find how these things are working slowly, gradually. You know, awareness of what's going on. And then we encounter resistance. Because I'm trying to meditate. I'm trying to think of God. I'm trying to send love to everybody. And contrary thoughts arise in the mind. This was not expected. Swami Adishwarananda was very funny Swami. He used to say that these impressions are waiting there. And, you know, after starting our spiritual practice and meditation, we think we are doing very well and the mind is very peaceful. The first, you know, in the beginning, we experience great joy and peace. And then one day, these old thoughts come and say, hello, I'm still here. And they have not gone anywhere. They're still there, and we have to deal with them. Yeah. So our intention is the best in the world. We really want, we are sincere. We want to change ourselves, improve our personality, develop love for God, and eventually be free. That's all very good. But what about what's in my mind, which I have accumulated? I have to deal with that. That is really hard work. Nobody will see you there with a spade digging the ground and saying, oh, you're working very hard. This is, you're sitting in meditation. Nobody can tell that you're struggling. So this is what makes it very hard. They call it samskaras, subtle impressions in the mind. I have done things for so many years in a certain way or so many lifetimes, and now I want to change it. Hey, the mind rebels. The mind doesn't want to do that. So it's like, for instance, you are driving on the highway. You're going north. And then suddenly you realize, oh, I should have gone south. So you cannot make a U-turn on the highway. Nobody does that. So you have to slow down, take the exit, and go enter the highway again and go south. So in the same way, in our lives, we have been selfish. We have been self-centered. It has been always me first. And God, well, I don't have any use for that. This world is everything. Let me earn money and enjoy. Now, this has been going on for a long time. Now I want to say, no, I want to be spiritual, not me. You, Lord. It won't happen overnight. It's slowly we change our personality. So this is why it's difficult. The mind has been used to thinking and operating in a certain way. Now we want to change it. We have so many I's, you know. I am a father, I am a mother, I am a son, I am the boss in the office, whatever it is. Now all these I's that I have, this multifaceted personality, have to come under the spiritual eye. These eyes don't want this fellow. They have been in charge. And now the fellow comes and says, no, you have to be good. You have to be unselfish. So that's why there is so much resistance. Swami Yatishwarananda used to say, until we can integrate our personality, all these eyes can be brought together and harmonized, we will continue to swing between the sublime and the ridiculous. One moment, I say, I am Brahman. The next moment, I'm watching TV. And that's our lives. That is better than watching TV all the time, right? At least part of the time I say, I'm Brahman. So like that, gradually we train ourselves. Nobody can do it for us. We have to train ourselves gradually to change our lives. Shankaracharya says that a father has his children to pay his debts. It is true. If the children have the means, they will pay the debts of the father. But he has none but himself to free himself from bondage. The children are helpless. So this is, we have to do it ourselves. We have to train ourselves. So our situation is like Duryodhana. In the Mahabharata, he told Krishna, I know what is right, but I cannot practice it. I know what is wrong, but I cannot refrain from doing it. It's a very famous utterance. So our understanding is very clear. That's not the problem. We know what's right, we know what's wrong. But we find difficulty in practicing it. But I tell you one thing, when we try, we do get better. It won't happen overnight. Swami Brahmananda used to say, there is no injustice in spiritual life. There is injustice, so much injustice in this world, apparently, when you look at this world. But he said, there is no injustice in spiritual life. If we make an effort, we will get some result. May not be the result we expect. It may be something else. But there will be a result. Swami Chetananda likes to quote Turiyananda. That he says that, look, even a laborer carrying heavy loads gets paid for their work. And God will not pay for your love and your service and your work? How is it possible? So a common problem in this stage of the spiritual journey, when we are traveling, when we are going along the path, is losing the enthusiasm, becoming discouraged because of this problem, that the mind is very stubborn, that the mind refuses to obey us. We say, I want to meditate every day. And the mind says, I want to just do anything but meditate. So to have that persistence that no matter what. You mind, you be as restless as you want to be, but at least 10 minutes, whatever I have assigned for meditation, 5 minutes is much more than nothing. If you do 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening, for years, you yourself will feel like adding more time. Nobody will have to tell you. But if we give up completely, then, you know, our understanding will be very good about the path, but we will never reach the goal. We will never walk the path. So, Sri Ramakrishna gave the example of the hereditary farmer. He says, when in India, there is a farmer, through generations, they have been doing farming. So they are very stubborn. There may be the worst drought you can imagine. They will continue to farm. Seems to be one of their traits. So he says, you have to be like that. Like the hereditary farmer. No matter if there is drought or flood or whatever, you continue to till the soil. Sometimes you get a crop, sometimes you don't. But you continue. Doesn't matter. Swamiji, Swami Vivekananda said, if a person has a spiritual ideal in their lives, they may make 50 mistakes, because it's human to make mistakes. It's not that we take to the spiritual path and we become perfect overnight. We continue to be human and we'll make mistakes. So if a person has a spiritual ideal, they may make 50 mistakes in their lives. But without a spiritual idea, they will make 1,000 mistakes. So that's the idea. We may not become perfect, but we become less imperfect. Isn't that an achievement? We aim at perfection. We aim very high. And in the process, we'll become less imperfect. So that itself is very encouraging. But it's a big challenge, because our ideal is very high. We say, ultimately, we are divine. We are pure spirit. We are Brahman. At the same time, as I said earlier, we are this little self, this I. Some time ago, we were having a class. We were reading the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And Sri Ramakrishna says somewhere that the greatest obstacle to illumination is the I, capital I. So one devotee read this sentence, and I said to him, what do you think about this teaching of Sri Ramakrishna? He said, I totally agree. I thought that was funny. It's confusing. I totally agree that the I is the greatest obstacle. It's really confusing. So there are there are many disciplines. There are many things that can help us along the way. We can talk about three things that help us. Because we need all the help we can get. So one is Sadhu Sangha, holy company. How does it help us to be in the company of a holy person? The most obvious benefit is they will teach us. They will tell us, look, this is what I learned through my experience, and this is what happened to me. And so by just listening to their teachings, we get help. We are benefiting from their expertise in spiritual life. There's a more subtle influence. And when there is a really holy person, they have a different vibration. Yes. So when we come in their proximity, it is infectious. But we may not be aware of it. Sometimes I perceive it with some people, you know, some old swamis. The way I perceive it is like they live life at a different pace. The speed is different. It's very subtle. Each person will perceive it in a different way. But these, their subtle influence will really help us as well. So this is just being in their presence. You don't have to do anything. They don't do anything. They just are themselves. But somehow, there is a radius of influence around them, which we don't know how wide it is, and they affect people. If they are peaceful and you come close to them, you will have the tendency to feel inner peace. If they're joyful, you will feel joy and you will not know why. It's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. So this is another way that Holy Company helps. And then with the example, sometimes the example, I see how they are living their lives. Suppose I am with a holy person, somebody comes and abuses them with very harsh words, and I see that they don't react. It's like talking to a wall. Not only they don't react, but you can feel that mentally there is no reaction. Because you can not react and be like this, you know, and you're still not reacting, but you're just somehow holding back. But there is no such thing. There is no anger that is being controlled. There is no anger to begin with. So when you see that, that is something spontaneous. Nobody said, hey, somebody will come and abuse you. No. This, you're just having a good time, somebody comes and abuses, you know, somebody who is maybe mentally unbalanced or whatever. And so out of the blue, they get this aggression and there is no reaction at all. So that makes me feel, hey, I want to be like him. I want to be like that as well. I don't want to be bothered by these things. So by the example, we get a lot of help as well. So the teachings, the subtle influence of their personality and the example. So it's like, say you have a rich neighbor and they come with fancy cars and have parties and all that, and you feel, oh, I wish I would be like him. So this is spiritual wealth. When you see somebody spiritual having so much control over their lives, we want to be like them. Even subconsciously, I may not be consciously saying that, oh, I want to be like them, but I can see they have peace and happiness in this life, not after death, here and now. So this example of living with the holy man can be very subtle also. There are a couple of stories that I read recently. I think Swami Prabhavanandaji tells them. One is that he was in Belur Math, and Swami Premananda, one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, he was scolding a novice severely, shouting and really angry. So here is an old Swami, disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, scolding a novice for some mistake he made, but really mad. And so Swami Prabhavananda just enters the room like he's going somewhere else, and Premananda turns to him and smiles in the middle of the scolding, and then turns back and continues to scold. So he says, that smile is such a teaching. So there was not a word spoken, but he could see through it that he's not really mad. If you're really mad, you cannot turn around and smile, and then continue with the scolding. That's not possible. So like that, in a subtle way, when you live with such people, you learn a lot just by watching them smile. And another story he tells, similar somehow, they were trekking in the Himalayas with one Swami. He was an American Swami, Atulananda. And there was an avalanche suddenly, and the rocks were coming down on them, big boulders. And Swami Prabhavananda felt, this is the end of it. There's no way we can avoid this. So he turns back to look at Atulananda, and again he's smiling, like, I'm ready. And then by inches they are missed. You know, the boulders just go over their heads by a few inches. But he says, I'll never forget that smile. Because he thought, this is the end of it. Let me see what he's doing. He's smiling. So it's very subtle sometimes. Just see somebody smile. But it's very inspiring. You can never forget that smile after that. So we try to find these people, this holy company, but it's not easy. Such people are rare. If we find anybody like that, we are very lucky. But what if we don't have great saints? What are we going to do? We need holy company. Well, the Bhagavatam gives a very nice definition of who is a teacher. Anybody with more virtue than average can be a teacher, according to the Bhagavatam. So if I find somebody who can inspire me, who has some virtues that I don't have, why not learn from them? So we can learn from our personal teacher or guru. They will teach us if we are formally somebody's student. We can have upagurus, that means secondary teachers. Suppose somebody became my teacher and they passed away. But I find somebody else who is very helpful and inspiring. I consider them my upaguru, my secondary teacher, and they can help us a lot. That is also holy company. And also, holy company would be a guru bhai, that means a fellow disciple. Anybody can be my teacher. How? Well, I know I have defects in me and some virtues too. And the other person also will have the same thing. So I learn from their virtues. I'm sure somebody else will have something I lack. So we can help each other. That is also holy company. The company of another spiritual seeker. We can benefit as well. So I will learn from the virtues of the other person, and I will put up with their shortcomings. They will learn from my virtues, and they will put up with my shortcomings. That's how we will help each other. Another thing that will help us on the way is karma yoga. To serve. This world, as it is give and take. Everything in this world is give and take. We are always taking things from others and giving. And if we don't want to give, it will be taken from us. Because that is how the world is built up. So karma yoga is, I want to give and I don't want to take. It's a new attitude. Normally is, I gave you, hey, where is my partner? Give and take. But no, I want to give and I don't want to take. That is, very simply put, is karma yoga. And St. Francis said, it is in giving that we receive. It's a mysterious law that when we give, somehow it will come back to us through some other channel. Nothing is lost. Swami Vivekananda said, unselfishness pays more than selfishness. But people don't have the patience to practice it. Brother Lawrence said that God does not regard the greatness of our work. Say, for instance, you come to the Vedanta Society and you sweep the floor. Well, you may say there's no greatness in that. But Brother Lawrence says, God does not consider the greatness of our work, but the love with which we perform it. So sweeping the floor is fine. If I have a loving attitude towards that work, towards God. Somebody else said, The work we do does not matter. The nature of the work that I do does not matter. What matters is the person I am becoming by doing that work. So the nature of the work becomes totally secondary. Who am I becoming by doing that work? That is the most important thing. So karma yoga has two dimensions, you can say. One is the normal dimension that we know of, that we do things and say you come to the Vedanta Society, you do voluntary work. There is no remuneration. You don't get a salary, but you do it anyway as karma yoga, as an act of love. So you're doing something unselfish. So that is very good. That is karma yoga. But there is another stage of karma yoga. And this is illustrated with a story. A man wanted to practice spiritual life, do some sadhana. So he heard that there was a holy man in a temple. And he came to him and said, "Sir, I want to attain illumination and I want to be your disciple. What should I do?" The man said, "Okay, that's very good. You come every day and you will polish the worship vessels for the puja every day." So, okay, the man agreed, and every day he came, he was coming and polishing the vessels, you know. Takes time, these copper vessels, they get very stained, so you have to scrub them nicely. And so he took his time, he did a very good job every day. And after some years, he felt, "I'm doing this every day, as my guru told me, but I don't see much changing me. What is the matter? I'm not happy with my... It seems like nothing has changed. There has been no improvement. I'm the same person." So he comes back to the guru and says, "Sir, you told me to do this, and I have been doing it, but I don't see any change in me." Then the guru says, "Okay, let me ask you a question. When you polished the vessels yesterday, what were you thinking about?" And he had to think about it. He said, "Oh, you know, I had a headache. I had a toothache. And I was thinking, I have to go to the dentist. And I hope it's nothing serious, otherwise it will be expensive. And I have to make an appointment as soon as I finish the vessels, etc., etc." Then the guru said, "And can you remember what you were thinking day before yesterday?" He said, "Oh, day before yesterday, it was my friend's birthday, and I forgot. So suddenly I remember when I was polishing the vessels, and I was thinking, oh, what shall I buy for him? And what shall I wear at the party? And I hope I can do that after I finish the vessels." Then the guru said, "That's your problem. When you polish the vessels, you have to think of God. You have to be in the here and now. Not thinking about these things." Now, but the interesting part of this story is the guru could have told this at the beginning, and he didn't. He could have said, "You polish the vessels and you fix your mind on God." But he didn't. He just said, "Polish the vessels." So after some years, the student himself felt that this is something is missing here. And now the guru gives the higher instruction. So karma yoga is very good. We come and do selfless work. But where is our mind? If I am thinking of the toothache and the party at my friends and all that, then it is still karma yoga. It will be beneficial, but it will not be the same as if my mind is thinking of the work I'm doing, if it is thinking of God. So this is a higher aspect of karma yoga, to be able to work and keep the mind on God at the same time. It takes a lot of practice. But many people have achieved that. And we're coming to the end of Brother Shankara, another few minutes. It's almost 8. So we'll keep short the end of the journey. So another help is dhyana, or meditation. When we get a mantra from a teacher, that's a big help also. But I won't go into that because it will become very late. So what happens is, we have been walking along the way, we have been struggling very hard for many years, and still we don't reach the goal. Then what happens is, we feel utterly helpless. We have given everything, and still we haven't reached the goal. At that point, we surrender. We surrender to God. We said, up to here I came. I cannot go any further along the way. Now, something has to happen. Somebody has to help me. And then God will help us. The last stretch of the journey, we get the push from God. That's how we reach the end of the journey, about which nothing can be said about samadhi or nirvana. We become free. Like Buddha said, there is a candle with a flame. You put out the candle, where does it go? Where does the flame go? We don't know. It just ceases to be. So like that, the end of the journey is just like putting out the flame. It doesn't go anywhere. So we'll stop here. And we saw some ideas about the spiritual journey, the departure, finding the way, going along the way, and the arrival. Om asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritam gamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness to light. Lead us from death to immortality. Peace, peace, peace be unto all.